me now on a telephone interview from San Francisco is Matt Aiklin.
I'm here with Ryan Salazar, Jr. at Cal State Long Beach. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Corona, California, which is the Inland Empire.
When did you finally come out?
I came out this year, 2008, in March. Actually, March 6th, 2008.
Matt is 26 years old, and Matt and I are from the same hometown, and it's called Visalia. Could you tell me a little bit about your experience in Visalia, California?
I grew up in Visalia, which is in the middle of the Central Valley. It's a small kind of religious neighborhood, comprised of about 300,000 people, surprisingly. My family is deeply, deeply religious, and I'm their homosexual son. What I did there was I was kind of created a different person, created a character, played a character.
Did you feel a difference between growing up in Corona and kind of feeling that you were held back? Maybe they weren't as gay accepting there? Or did you feel like Long Beach could help you come out more?
I definitely felt more accepted here in Long Beach than I did growing up, just because I did get teased, even though I wasn't out. But Long Beach State seems to have a more open community, which is kind of nice.
When I moved to Silver Lake with my boyfriend, there was a larger homosexual community. I had West Hollywood and Silver Lake, and therefore there was, you know, a lot more to do, a lot more networking, a lot more friends to be made, a lot more opportunities to just kind of build relationships. And I lived in New York. New York as a whole is such a melting pot for different cultures and different religions and different races, and just, you know, and you have to coexist there. And when I wanted to go out to a gay club, I didn't just go to West Hollywood like I did in L.A. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, there's one on 2nd and 2nd. Oh, there's one on 51st and 9th. Oh,
right.
There's, no, like, it was all over the city.
I definitely noticed that as well. Like, when I lived there, that there was not a concentrated area that you could be walking by, like, something that's kind of known as like a professional's parlor, you know, where the businessman goes to have a drink after work, and then right next door there's drag queen bingo. There, you know, there, and I think you make a good point that it is such, every space that you have in New York is shared space because of the population and the way the city is structured. It doesn't make sense to put up so many boundaries.
Do you think that we should be not as segregated with the gay community here?
I would 100% agree with that. I mean, in New York, I've never been there, but like he said, it's definitely, you know, you go around the corner and there's a drag queen, but right next to it, it's a deli for old people. But here, it's like, you know, West Hollywood is for the gays, and you know, Laguna Beach is for the gays, but it's like we have separate places.
If you were in Long Beach, you went to one of four clubs in the kind of gay neighborhood. If you were in Silver Lake, you went to one of three places. In New York, completely different experience. You could go anywhere.
I don't know that it's always necessarily from a communication perspective productive to group gay people, lesbian people, transgendered people, intersex people, bisexual people, and assume that these people all engage in the same type of communicative practices, or that all of their communicative practices can be put under a single umbrella. And because I study gay male culture, I know that gay male culture, in a lot of ways, is very different than lesbian culture or transgendered culture. Or, you know, so from a communication perspective, I see a utility in being able to say that there are different types of identity positions that are socially constructed and somewhat arbitrary, but still meaningful.
When we all think about the history of the nation and just in pop culture and in gay culture.
Do you feel that there's a gay culture out there? And how would you define it?
I think there's definitely a community out there. I don't know if there's necessarily a culture. I mean, we definitely have our own thing every now and then. But, you know, I think the main part is just us being able to be accepted into mainstream culture, which is what we're striving for.
What was your take on the Prop 8 outcome?
I was disappointed, obviously. I was really bummed the day after. But I, you know, thinking about it, it's just the beginning, and it'll happen eventually. It'll happen.
Well, if you have an institution in the gay community that promotes monogamy, that helps curtail the spread of sexually transmitted diseases. Beyond even being like a rights issue or an assimilation issue, was an issue of public health in my mind. And that's not to say that married people don't sleep around, or, you know, married people can't be promiscuous, certainly, But if you're trying to promote a healthy sexual lifestyle, it seems to me like people should have an investment in marriage.
No, not really here. It was almost unanimous, I think, for San Francisco, because we have so many homosexuals in office here, and it is so widely kind of accepted around here. It's not a place where in any neighborhood, really, I would feel uncomfortable, you know, in any way. It's was kind of surprising, I feel like, to all of us, because we do here live in such a liberal bubble here in San Francisco that it even passed. Not as surprising to me as it was to others, because yeah. I came from Visalia and I went home for my sister's wedding a week or 3 weeks before the election. And I saw, you know, yes on just all of this campaigning, you know, to basically defend the religious right.
Mm-hmm.
And really what it was a lot more just of a propagandist like turn, because there's a lot more of a Christian community there.
What does it feel like for you to feel like you're 26 years old, someone in your generation who's still having to fight for this? What does that feel like?
It's almost like, are we still doing this? Like, why? I mean, in 1967, you couldn't have multiracial marriage. And that was not too long ago, but it's like, why are we marching for civil rights?
All of my mentors who were gay or lesbian identified as queer, and I was like, well, so I'm going to do the same thing. And they were really against the idea of marriage or anything that might mimic a heterosexual relationship, because again, that was something that stressed likeness and trying to get rights and acceptance through assimilation and conforming to heterosexual paradigms.
Do you have an opinion of how we have come a long way, and there have been so many groups that have been like second class citizens, and to be in 2008, that's a bit outdated. Do you think that gays are going to not become such a subculture?
When I hear the term faggot, I don't just associate that with a word by itself. I associate that with like my head being thrown into a locker or somebody like punching me.
My uncle is gay and he's 40 something years old, and just hearing stories from him and him having to hide it all through high school and having to, you know, go into parks and do things that weren't necessarily the best things to do, but, you know, he had to hide things that I don't necessarily have to hide anymore. So I think we've come a long way, and it's only going to get better.
Anything else you'd like to add?
Go Rainbow.
Yeah!
We'd like to thank everyone who contributed to make this episode of our podcast possible, especially Dr. Reagan Fox. He is a professor at California State University of Long Beach in the Communication Department. He was the third voice heard interviewed in this session.